Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide.
Hello again, it's Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network, taking you into the garage and talking to the folks that make the race cars go around the racetrack. I'm Steve Post, pit road reporter for the Motor Racing Network, joined by 25-time and championship-winning crew chief, Todd Gordon. Hello, Todd, how are you?
I'm good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no dirt on Bristol.
No dirt on Bristol. Concrete and resin and...
No, tire dust.
No tire dust.
There was tire dust all over Bristol, dust, no dirt.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We saw a lot on Sunday afternoon, Todd. Your take.
We did. I'm in the minority.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was fabulous, but we like the fact that we had tire degradation.
Sure.
Lap times that were going away. I think you saw guys were able to recover easily because everybody had to run 70%. To make the runs go long enough. I think this is one of those situations where we had a couple things that changed. That we went away from PJ1, went to resin, which I think everybody would have thought that's not a big deal, but and it was a little cooler. And it was only about 10 degrees cooler, but the ground temperature is colder too.
Right.
And I think there's a tipping point at which we see these concrete racetracks take rubber. We've seen it at Martinsville.
Yeah.
I think back to my experience, the spring race never raced like the August night race at Bristol.
Correct.
The August night race would rubber in, the top would rubber up. It actually over rubber. And the spring race, because it was cooler and the ground temperature was cooler, wouldn't build the rubber like it did. So I think we may have seen a compound of a few things. I know NASCAR and Goodyear are digging pretty deep into this. I like the trend. I think it's Denny Hamlin, I think, put it best in his post race.
Yeah.
He said, I don't hate it. From where we were and where we got to, maybe we need to come back a little bit.
Somewhere in the middle. Yeah.
Not a lot, but a little bit. I'd like to see it where we can get to 100 laps.
Yeah.
You know, just because you had a lot of guys just hanging on, hoping somebody else would wreck.
Yeah. I like two aspects of it. I like that the speeds fell off, that the lap times fell off.
Well, I mean, we saw 18-second lap times at times.
I like that, and I'm always a fan of more in the driver's hands.
Yes.
I don't like seeing corded tires, and the volume of corded tires was scary.
It's one thing when you see cords on the 2 inches of the shoulder, because guys like me were too aggressive on camber. That's one, but we just wore this
the whole thing
out, and it's... I'm not blaming Goodyear on this one.
No, not at all.
I brought back the same tire that they had last year. I actually talked to a couple crew chiefs. When the last tire set was released, it was a different date code.
Yeah.
Had similar wear trends on that. So it's not like it was a batch issue of this. I don't believe. I think we're looking at a colder racetrack. And the fact that I think there's some repercussions of the PJ1 may have actually, the stickiness of the PJ1 and the rubber that came off that and went up the racetrack may have had some stickiness to it and stuck into the racetrack. So I don't know. I'm sure that NASCAR and Goodyear are doing a really deep dive into this and trying to figure it out. We did. I like the lap time fall off. I like the fact that we put it back in the driver's hands of, you know, we saw teams recover from penalties.
Right. Yeah, right.
Ty Gibbs ended up in the back, and he just drove his gut. I mean, he just drove 85% instead of 70% and drove right back to the front. It's a risk because he was wearing his tires out. Caution came, he got there. Denny Hamlin, similar situation. Got boxed in, stalled in his pit box. He started tail end, drove all the way to lead. Caution came out, reset.
Perfect timing to reset the tires, yeah.
Kyle Larson.
Yep.
Had an equipment interference penalty on the last caution stop we had.
Normally, that's the kiss of death.
Oh, it would have been. And he drove his guts out, drove into the top five, showed cords at that point, came to pit road a little early on that last green flag cycle, but came out with a top five finish. So we saw the comers and goers. I think that's good. I'm like Denny. I think we overachieved.
Right.
And I think Goodyear thinks we overachieved. Yeah. And it's not, I don't think it was a Goodyear thing.
No.
It's just a combination of the changes Maybe they can back that up a little bit. Get us to 100 laps.
I think Greg Stucker, who is director of race tire sales, he's a great resource that we all use a lot. He even acknowledged, he was like, this is kind of what we wanted, but too much of what we wanted. And but we'll see what happens with it. That temperature thing to me is a challenge, because how do you develop a tire 3 months before?
It's tough.
With knowing the temperature.
And in a couple weeks, we'll go back to Martinsville, and I don't think that we will see the race that we saw last year as a playoff race. It was 80-some degrees.
That's right. Remember that, yeah.
And a track rubbered up. And Martinsville is one of those places that when you go, it's you'll build rubber, it'll actually, they call it like worm, like you'll see the rubber start to roll, and then you, once you get that track rubbered in like that, it takes 60-70 laps of a run to get there, but once it gets there, guys can't run on that rubber. They've either got to figure out how to carve around the curb under it, or they got to get up top. So I like that at Martinsville, and I like that, I like how Bristol races when it gets rubbered up top, me personally, but I still think it was a good show. I think we overdid it.
Yep, over the top. A couple of attaboys. I don't think it's a shocker that the front three were all veteran racers.
Yes.
Denny Hamlin, Chris Gabehart, Martin Truex Jr., James Small, and last week's guest, Matt McCall, and his driver, Brad Keselowski. This is two straight weeks where both those cars have been in the top seven. Here we remember we got the summer last year where RFK seemed to get their stride. They're getting their stride in the spring, it seems like this.
Yeah, 2-4 and what, 3-7 this week?
3-7 this time.
So, Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Yeah. And you know, that goes back to, you know, all those guys hopped out saying tire management. These are the guys that had to race the old racetrack.
Yeah.
You know, that were around to see what Darlington was like pre being repaved. It's still back to that, but it's not like it was.
Not,
I mean,
like
you go back at it early to mid 2000s.
Oh gosh.
They were wore out by the time you left pit road.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So it's cool to see that.
Yeah. Alex Bowman, Blake Harris, a much needed fourth place finish. Yes. Great to see for those guys. John Hunter Nemechek, sixth place. Ty Gibbs, Chris Gayle. It's just a matter of when they're going to win a race, not if they're going to win a race. That team is really performing well.
They are. And I don't know. You know, we talk about needing to get to 100 races. When you look at all of our superstars,
that's true, you're right.
You've got to learn that he's got speed. They've got speed. You got to learn how to make that all come to fruition.
To get to lap 500.
Chase Elliott took almost 100 laps to get a win. He finished second a bunch of times, but they're coming. Yeah. And they've got a lot of, I thought they were the best of the Gibbs car.
Yeah.
But that may have been because he wasn't saving enough.
Well, there's that. That's part of the learning process. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, because two of the Gibbs cars finished first and second.
The veteran
Gibbs guys finished first and second. The kids finished ninth and tenth or something like that. Yeah.
It's just one of those things that, you know, when you get to these situations of management,
yeah,
I think the veterans have an upper hand.
Absolutely. Let's see. Other winner, Craftsman Truck Series, Christian Eckes, Charles Denneke. That's been a really good combination.
Yeah.
And Charles now has 7 career truck series wins as a crew chief, 5 with Christian Eckes. They won 4 times last year. This was the one that Corey Heim passed him late last year in this one to bump him out of what would have been the final 4, and they won Phoenix. So you go back and think, oh, if we'd have just won Bristol, little redemption, not a lot of redemption, but a little bit, but a great run. And holding off Kyle Busch at Bristol, every young driver wants to be able to boast about that.
Yeah, that's one that'll definitely give you a confidence boost. So great accomplishment there, and looking forward to what that does the rest of the season.
Yep. Speaking of looking forward, we're going to COTA this week, and we need to talk to a crew chief with a driver combination that will be good on road courses.
They have both won independently on road courses. It'd be good to talk to Matt Swiderski.
Matt Swiderski from Trackhouse Racing is driver Daniel Suarez, and we'll talk to Matt next.
Hey everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
Welcome back. It is Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network. Let's go to the Zoom call. Joining us from over, and I have fumbled with this one so many times, joining us from Trackhouse Racing, not Colic Racing, Trackhouse Racing. Matt Swiderski joins us. Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Okay, so I'm struggling with the transition. You've won a race already. How has the transition from Colic to Trackhouse been for you?
It's been good. It's been great. All the guys here have been great to work with and have gotten me up to speed. But it's a learning curve for sure. Coming from a place, I was there day one when we started the Cup program at Colic, so I knew where everybody was buried, where to find everything, every trick we had, and how to get stuff done. And coming to a new organization that's being the new guy, trying to figure out who to talk to get things done. There's some challenges there, but everybody's been great and gotten me up to speed quickly.
Talk about, from the outside looking in, you got SVG over at Colic running the Xfinity program. You've got people in different places. There's kind of a working relationship between the two programs. Was this more of a trade within like kind of working partners? Travis Mack went over to fill your position there and you came over here?
It wasn't really laid out to go exactly that way.
Okay.
To be honest, I was pretty happy at Colic. Wasn't planning on leaving. Enjoyed working with AJ. And then when AJ was getting moved back to Xfinity, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do at that point. Kind of got lucky. I wasn't really looking, but Trackhouse reached out and they were ready to make a change over here. So at that point, it kind of turned into more of a trade deal and hopefully worked out for both sides.
Yeah, yeah. In another piece, I just want to talk through this transition piece, but from the outside, Trackhouse has a unique culture. It's different. What do you notice now that you're embedded into it?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's a new company, Justin and Ty and everybody put a lot of effort into making it a fun place to work. They're worried about the culture. They do little things to make sure like everybody's wife or husband is included and, make sure that the company appreciates the family sacrifice that goes into doing this sort of stuff. So it's got kind of a fresh feel to it, but it's also kind of laid on a foundation of a team that was here. And a lot of people are left over from the days of Chip Ganassi Racing. So there's a lot of established procedures too. So it's kind of a best of both worlds.
Pretty neat stuff, that's for sure. You mentioned you're up at Colic, and when AJ's situation was changed, you weren't sure what you were going to do. You end up with Daniel Suarez. What have you learned about your new driver that you're paired up with this year? What have you learned about Daniel?
He puts in a ton of effort. He really studies everything you hand to him. It's interesting to kind of compare how Daniel and AJ are similar, both kind of having, kind of a road course background with Daniel coming from karts and both extremely aggressive on the brakes and, offended if they're not the first person to get to the center of the corner. So still dealing with that. But then very, very different in some other aspects. AJ is absolute pure emotion and you have to handle that. So it's, Daniel's much more just to the point, very blunt in his comments, but it's an open, honest discussion, and it's worked well so far.
So, you get paired up with Daniel. What are we? Two races in, and you go to Victory Lane. How does that change your season?
Yeah, it couldn't have been planned out any better as far as getting that out of the way. Everything had kind of come together pretty late in the off season, like. By the time we had finished everything, it was into January when I started here. So, spent that short amount of time getting up speed and spending time with Daniel going to lunch and, trying to understand what I was getting into and how I could best, help the team, my role had to change a little bit. When I was at Colic, I had to balance more of the engineering side, and I came to Trackhouse, and there's an established engineering group, and I had to figure out how to fit in with that. So getting the win out of the way early on has been huge. It allows us to try some stuff and get a game plan to look for the postseason.
No doubt. Really, really neat stuff. All right. The hot topic this week is Bristol. Your assessment, your take on what you guys did, how you handled it, how you managed it at Bristol this past weekend.
I mean, first off, I think, Goodyear provided the tire that we've been asking for you know, as long as we've been doing it. The only complaint I have about it at all is I wish I knew it was going to do that going in. You know, we had all of our pre-event meetings and we're talking about, you know, running 150 laps on a set of tires and we're going to run it like a road course race. And, you know, and even in practice, you know, people had some, you know, some tire issues and we're like, okay, well, the first run's going to be rough and we're going to have some tire wear, but it's going to get better. It's going to go back to old Bristol. And, you know, we looked at notes from the test that the 71 car had done there earlier and they had tire issues there, but it was a Bristol test. People always have tire, you know, it doesn't get rubbered in. We figured it was going to change and the top was going to come in and obviously it didn't, but if we could have that every week, I'd love it. I'd like to redo my setup a little bit to accommodate that.
So I want to hit two things off of this. So after the second run of the race, when you really don't see the track starting to take rubber, because that's the way I looked at it. In practice, yeah, okay, it's like Dover used to be, right? First set of tires at Dover go 15 laps, they'd be showing cords. By the time we got into the race, it'd be fine. After the second run of the race and you see that the racetrack's not taking rubber, what's the discussion on how to handle the tire wear situation from that point forward?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it falls into driver coaching, working with your spotter, and trying to manage what you have. You know, obviously on the pit box, we can start looking at tire pressures and adjustments there. And you just think, okay, he's not able to load up the tires as much as we expected. So, you know, playing with air pressure to accommodate that. But mostly just trying to work with our spotter Frankie and communicate to Daniel what he can do, when we should go. And, you know, I felt like early on in the race, it was really interesting as, you know, some teams were figuring it out and some teams weren't, and we're just, seeing the comers and goers was really exciting. And by the end of the race, I think everybody was starting to get at least, as settled as they could with, you know, the setup they had in the car.
Did you, I guess I want two more. I just keeps going here. Did you feel like running in the resin was a better place to run than up on the virgin racetrack at that point? And if, you know, do you think if there was resin farther up the racetrack, maybe this extends the run?
Yeah, I think for sure. Staying on the bottom, staying in the resin helped prolong the tires a little bit. But it, you know, it gets to be a trade-off of, you know, early in a run, you can go up to the middle groove and pass a few cars. Yep. And it's, you know, it's so hard to pass. Should you take them then? And, you know, it's definitely a trade-off and figuring out when you can make your moves. And I think towards the end of the race, it became even harder because everybody was kind of saving their tires to the same amount. So you didn't get as big of a run on as many of cars as you did early in the race.
So you alluded to this. This is the last piece off of this one, but this is all out of what you said three times ago. You got the same tire and track preparation for the second Bristol. Are there things that you can do car setup wise, team wise, to extend the tire wear into, say, 80, 90 lap?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we can definitely get where we can consistently run in the, you know, 70 or 80 laps, you know, especially in the front. You know, you set your camber for a certain lateral load, and when the driver's not able to get there with the pace we're running, we're just wearing the inside of the tires out. So there's a little bit we can do there. You know, we can make the power more compliant because we're not trying to support as much load. So there's a lot of things we can work on that I think we can definitely improve it. And you know, if NASCAR and Goodyear could bring a tire like this to every racetrack, I'd love to start moving in that direction on, you know, on some mechanical grip setups and, you know, take a little less of the aero platform feel out of the setups we're building.
Fascinating times. It really, truly is. So from Bristol to COTA, you're going there with, as a guy that's won road course races before with AJ Allmendinger, your driver won at Sonoma on a road course, really good down there. And actually, Todd has mentioned this multiple times. The 2 years ago, Daniel Suarez was the best driver there. How do you approach this weekend? What's your take on going into COTA?
So the big challenge for us for this particular race is, it's the new aero package. Yeah. So figuring out how that's going to affect the race cars. The road course is, over the past few years, it's been really hard to get rear grip in the car. Most of the people are running, have the option to run rear bars. A lot of people run them for the road courses. It's one of those things where you're really battling to get the car to turn and still put the power down. So I think this aero package is going to make that even harder. Rear grip is going to be at a premium. That'll be the biggest challenge, trying to figure that out. We've got 2 20-minute practices and 2 sets of tires to make our best stab at it. But, you're kind of locked in on a lot of the setup parameters. So using the simulator and working through everything there. So hopefully it's just fine-tuning some shock clicks and some heights and balance metrics once we unload.
Yeah, and as Matt talks about rear sway bars, when you say rear sway bars, they transfer load from the inside tire to the outside tire, free the car up in lateral. Definitely, to me, always an edgy tuning tool, one that it's very driver sensitive. You talked about, the challenges of rear grip, but we've seen a fair amount of this racetrack end up with new asphalt on it. When you look at it, from 2 to 3, not a big deal, but 9, 10, 11, which is leading up to the long straightaway in the back, and then the braking zone into 12, I feel like that was one that used to be a challenge. Talk about all those. How do you kind of anticipate those repave areas and what it will change in historic setup?
Yeah, I think back to like when they redid Watkins Glen a while back, how much speed we picked up there. It was it definitely changed the direction we went on setups, from a worn out racetrack to some fresh pavement. This one's kind of interesting because you're going to have kind of a mix. The braking potential in the next gen car when you're on some fresh pavement is going to be pretty incredible. So, I think controlling that load transfer to the front is going to be important. People like AJ and SVG and Daniel, who are experience on road courses and really want to be aggressive getting in the corner, are going to have that opportunity. So it should be interesting, but we're building a setup around that so that they can make those moves will be the challenge.
Matt, final question for you here as we get ready to cut you loose. We always have a little bit of fun, go a little off the racetrack. You shared with us last time about your side hustle, your side business, Rudder's Rod Shop. And you shared with us what you were working on up there. It is a custom street rod shop that you are owner of up in Hickory, North Carolina. What's on the shop floor now? What are you working on up there?
So a few big things. We actually started rebranding it, so we changed the name up now. It's actually Squid's Rod Shop.
All right.
So we did some cool logo design with that. We actually just bought the first car that we're going to do in-house that's not a customer car. So we got a 52 Chevy Deluxe slope back that we're going to do a full custom chassis, chop the top, French in the headlights. Really excited. We got 7 employees out there doing all kinds of fabrication work, paint and body. So it's exciting. Something exciting to do on the few times I'm able to get away.
Yeah, we had joked around last time. You said when Matt Collig and Chris Rice allowed you to get over there, is Justin allowing you and Ty allowing you to get over there much, or is it about the same for you?
It's really tough, especially at the beginning part of the season. West Coast swing and everything's made it really tough, but I'm really happy with the staff I've gotten out at the rod shop now. So I check in quite a bit with them and make it out there a couple times a day, but it's good that I have people I can trust out there now.
That is great. Squid's Rod Shop. I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely cool. Matt, we always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for sharing some time with us here today, and we wish you well at COTA and on throughout the balance of the season.
All right, cool. Thanks for having me on.
There we go. Matt Swiderski, Squid's Rod Shop. I love that. Absolutely good stuff joining us here on the Crew Call. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
Welcome back. It is Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network. Todd Gordon and Steve Post. Hey, if you like what we're doing here on Crew Call, make sure you subscribe to this channel, whatever channel you're listening on, whether you're listening or watching, subscribe to this channel, like and share this with all of the followers on your social platforms. Todd, as we move on, Squid, always good to talk to Matt, yeah. And really, really fun to talk to him. And I always watch these races, and when a driver wins, everyone's like, Daniel won. I'm like, Squid won. Yes. I mean, I think about it as crew chiefs win. No offense, Denny. I can take or leave Denny Hamlin, but I like when Chris Gabehart wins a race because I think the world of Chris. He's one of my go-to guys, and I think the world of him. It's just fascinating, and I'm so glad to see them get off to a good start.
Yeah, yeah. Great to get that monkey off your back, race two, and be able to race a little freer. So be interested to see how this all plays out. I look for them to be competitive this weekend. Danny's Daniel's a pretty good road racer, as you alluded to, but I felt like he was the best car in 22, first right. Next-gen racer. Stayed out for the stage points, was driving back through, got caught up in a wreck. And eventually his teammate won the race. I think I've heard this several times. It was good to hear Matt say it too, but Daniel's work ethic.
Yeah.
He's dedicated to making this whole thing happen. I think, it'd be interesting to see where this all plays out, but, I would look for them to be one of the five or six cars I think they can win this weekend.
Man, that'd be something. That really would. The racetrack, you had asked about it. So we have part of the surface is all worn out and part of the surface is new asphalt.
Yeah, and from what I gathered out of it, other series that race there, my presumption would be F1 asked for some repave areas.
Yeah.
I know that braking zone into 12 off the long back straightaway was really bumpy. I can't believe for an F1 car that's very exciting. So,
but it might be exciting. That's not optimal.
It may change the lanes around here a little bit. I think, 9, 10, 11. 11 is a really tight corner that leads to that long back straightaway. Staying on it may be more important because there's grip rather than overrunning to the runoff area then coming back. We'll see where that plays out. The braking zone into 12, that's going to be pretty straightforward. Everybody's going to be chasing the grip. It's all there. And then they paved outside of the infield kind of stadium section. 18 and 19, the third to last, second to last corners. So how you run the carousel, kind of that big sweeper, may be different because you may use up all the racetrack till you get to the grip and let the grip turn you.
And let the grip turn
you. We saw that at Darlington when we paved that kind of area off of two.
And two, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how all these drivers adapt to the different grip levels of the new asphalt and old asphalt.
How good. Then how do you create simulation for this?
That's a
the
dice.
Really,
it's a guess on you. You'll go back in, and they will within their maps. They'll probably go in and change some colors of the texture. Yeah. They'll kind of paint an area on the visual, and then in that area they'll actually up the grip on that. But it's a guess as to how much grip you're adding. And that may change during the weekend. We may see that. First grip, first run out, that asphalt is slick because it's not got rubber laid into it yet. And it'll be a moving target. When you look at repaves, like when we went to Watkins Glen, the first tire test, I did that with Joey, but like the first laps on the racetrack, it was hard. You just, because it was all fresh asphalt, you hadn't got any rubber laid down into it. As you built rubber in the racetrack, it changed. And we may see that. We may see COTA evolve during the race weekend.
It's fascinating. It's going to be fun. It really is. I love that we're racing down there. It's just such a cool spot.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the piece, and I didn't bring up with Matt Skwiderski.
Oh, yeah.
But the restart zones move back to exiting turn 20. And that's going to try to alleviate the chaos of 8 wide getting into 1 and maybe cut it down to 4, and then we can manage from there. So That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. That uphill run, TV does not do it justice till you stand at that place.
I couldn't believe how uphill that is.
It's like into turn one. No wonder you brake so late, because you're going straight up.
Straight uphill.
It's impressive. That elevation changes.
There's that video from last year or 2 years ago where McDowell went to the outside and drove around like 12 cars or something. It was just like, I can't think of turn one at COTA without laughing about that.
Yeah, the challenge is eventually that whole wreck is going to move.
They asked Michael about it at Phoenix. They asked Michael about that at Phoenix, and he says, I hit it right one time.
Yes.
He says, but it scares you the rest of the time.
Yes. So, it'd be a great race.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. Good times. Motor Racing Network will be at COTA for the Truck Series race. It is the Expel 225. Our airtime is 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Performance Racing Network has the NASCAR Xfinity Series following our Truck Series coverage on Saturday, and then the NASCAR Cup Series race on Sunday. And I've just got to be honest here. We love PRN, MRN. We all get along. We all do really well. But I'm ready for a couple of MRN races, and the good news is we'll get started with Richmond. We'll be back in action at Richmond with the Cup Series. But
yes,
it's been a weird schedule this year.
Yeah, it's kind of you go, and then you stop. You go, yeah, and you stop. Forward to it because I get a spell here where I'm like every other week.
Nice.
I don't go to Richmond, but I'm at Martinsville.
Yeah.
Then I think a PRN race, I go to Talladega. So I get a little rhythm here.
You get a little rhythm to it, that's for sure. So great stuff for sure. And great stuff with Matt Swiderski. Always appreciate Matt joining us. One of the really, really good guys in the garage area. So that is going to do it for this episode of Crew Call. We appreciate you joining us here on the program. For Todd Gordon, I'm Steve Post. We'll talk to you next time here on MRN's Crew Call.